Hi, my name is Brendan Gann, and this is Uncommon.
Uncommon and Uncommon Clips are produced by Narelle, a unique digital agency. Head to narelle.com to learn more. That's NEURALLE.com.
Okay, so the Smosh campaign. Now, obviously, you've had this storied career. You were at Mechanism. You went back to the firm. You founded Epic Signal 2013. We've got VidCom, now back to Mechanism as well. So clearly, you're one of the first guys by chance that enters this space. I think you've said that in previous interviews, that the timing was just impeccable. You're really there at the commercial birth of social and influencer marketing, let's say. There's many different campaigns you run. We've got Mountain Dew, Unilever, Amazon, 20th Century Fox, the Olympics, many different features. I mean, in this time, it's obviously always changing. But to you now, today, June 2021, what seemed like the golden principles of social for brands and talent to you?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. Well, I'll just start rattling some off, and anything you want to do a deep dive on, let me know. I think one of the most important ones is like recognizing the power of compound interest in building a community. So starting small is a good thing, and making 1% gains each day and just applying learnings, that adds up. It's very slow, and then it speeds up really quick. It gets that hockey stick growth. But it requires a level of volume. And I think much of the industry is still very much hung up on this idea of quality, in the sense of like, if it's not great, I don't want to put it out there in the world. But great is very subjective. And what people want is not necessarily overly produced content. They might want that. But I think the best thing to do is go in with sort of like an approach where it's like, what can I create consistently on a regular basis that doesn't, it's not going to expend so much time, energy, and money that I'm like limiting the amount of opportunities to learn. So I think quality leading to quantity is sort of one of the biggest and most important lessons that really anyone in social can apply. Because if you've got quantity of content, you can always sort of make a small tweak each day and apply those learnings and make it better and better and better. And if you're so caught up in something being perfect to you, you're limiting yourself to those learning opportunities. And so, you might be pushing something out once every month, 3 months, 6 months, but somebody who's pushing something out every single day, they've got 30x the learnings, 30x the opportunities to build an audience and interact with their audience. And you can't compete, I think, with social, where volume is so important and learnings are so important.
So we'll go, number one is the value of compounding, which I would 100% agree with. You see that in podcasts when clients want to do podcasts and they say, oh, we want to do a series of 10. I'm like, it just doesn't work like that. You just can't do 10 and be done with it and expect results. So compound interest, and then adding to that is the quantity versus quality component.
I think that's, it's quantity leading to quality.
Okay. But you could then also argue that compound growth is going to improve the average quality, let's say.
100%.
So there's two: compounding, quality and quantity, and their relationship to each other. What else?
Yeah. I think the emotional side of things is really key as well. There have been all these studies out there around what content is shareable. Jonah Berger, the author of Contagious, has this great study. I think it's like this 2-page PDF out there. He talks about the three A's in terms of what is most likely to be shareable. from an emotional standpoint, it's awe, anger, and anxiety. Those are the three most shareable emotions. And sort of like a layer on top of all that is any emotional impact that sort of leads someone to express themselves like physically, that's more shareable. So it's not like, that was pretty funny. It's like, oh, I laughed out loud, or like, okay, oh, that was pretty sad. Tear in your eye. Like, you really need to make someone feel something. Mm-hmm. So I think tapping into emotions is another really critical one. And then I think the other one that's really, you see with like influencers in particular, is sort of these parasocial relationships that develop. You know, people talk a lot about like authenticity and these sort of terms that, which in my mind, I don't think quite capture what is happening, which is I see this person every single day. I see into their lives. I'm like looking into their eyes. Your brain processes that not really that much differently from like if that person's actually there in front of you. And that leads them to actually develop a relationship with them. There's like this whole, it's your limbic system. It like kicks off the same emotions and, you know, serotonin or whatever, I don't know what chemicals they are. When you're looking in someone's eyes on a computer as if they're right there. And so that leads to basically like friendships at scale. So like this one to many friendship. And that's why influencers are able to sort of, or just individuals are able to get audiences to go to such great lengths, and why it doesn't necessarily translate to, I think the results often don't translate as well to stuff like a great campaign or a celebrity, because you don't have that emotional connection. A friend's recommendation is going to trump a great commercial every day of the week. Like it can't compete. And so I think those sort of parasocial bonds and relationships is something that really anyone in social, particularly individuals, should try and cultivate.
Well, I was just looking here at the Wikipedia definition of that. So essentially parasocial interaction or relationships is, like you said, the processing of the brain, seeing a person who is famous or you don't see on a day-to-day basis and interacting and seeing that as an actual relationship. So obviously it sort of sounds like the more you see that person or the more authentic that person is in the way that you engage them, i.e. social influences, the more likely you to see them as a unique relationship, like a friend versus say Brad Pitt, who's on a cinema screen, if that makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 100%. You distilled that much more articulately. Sorry. I have a habit of just sort of like rambling, going off on.
No, that's fine. I got to say, it's always harder being interviewed than being the interviewer. There's no doubt about that in my mind after doing both. For sure.
You're being too kind.
No. No, seriously, I've done interviews and I'm like, what the fuck did I just say? You know? And the thing is, as an interviewer, you don't want to give people notes because it doesn't make the interview authentic. But
yeah,
it would be really good if you did that, because then people could formulate the idea in your head. So it's a really, really tough one. So I always do that with all guests, I would say. So we've got our four. Are there others that are sort of really coming back hard to you at all?
I'm trying to think here what another good... I mean, there's definitely a lot more. Obviously, there's like the basics, like niche is super important.
Yep.
You know, you've got to carve out a point of differentiation. You know, nowadays there's a million gaming channels. So what's your point of differentiation? I think oftentimes the best way to sort of define that is like overlap interests. And that makes it more narrow. And people think, oh, well, it's more narrow. I'm going to appeal to a smaller audience. But it's sort of like the inverse. It's like you're actually going to appeal to a very specific audience, which will then lead you to being able to grow a larger audience. Whereas if you try and go broad, nobody's going to latch on to you, and you need that core foundation to build upon.
Can I suggest one that I've noticed in the way that you talk about content? And maybe this is a subsection of a niche in that. So we at our agency, we manage, we'll probably only have 20 to 25, but we manage creators, and there's a TikTok focus simply because Instagram and YouTube talent managers don't take TikTok seriously as they should right now. So it's given us an opportunity, right? And every month I'll sit down with the creator and talk content strategy with them, what they're doing, et cetera. And I've noticed in particular, it's the idea of the format. I don't know if you'd agree with me on this, but it is, if you have a creator and they have 3 to 5 formats that they repeat continuously that they know their audience will come back to, just like Disney buys Star Wars and then makes 20 movies out of it, there's a repeatable format that they can use so long as their audience doesn't dissipate away from it and they're continuing to experiment. I always find that that is a good principle as well.
100%. I think that is so critical. And I think that's like, well, there's a few things to that. Like, look at, you know, every big YouTube channel, and you can sort of see the parallels. There's like Dude Perfect, Trick Shots. Like, you can summarize what they do in every video with like 1 or 2 words. And I think one of the part of the beauty of that singular focus and format is, one, you're able to apply learnings video to video because you can sort of tweak with different variables and you're not starting from a blank slate each time. So that almost like ladders back up to the compounding interest, because you're like making small adjustments versus not able to apply learnings from video to video. And then I think from a memorability standpoint and like resonating with the audience, it's like they know exactly what they signed up for if they followed you. Mm. And they're not going to see something different. And then from a creator standpoint, if you have that defined format, that focus allows you to increase the volume of content because you're not starting from scratch. You know, from a straight resource production standpoint, you're able to use the same setup. From an ideation standpoint, you're not, what's my big idea? And then what's the execution? You've got the big idea, you're just focused on the execution. So I think that's a great one.